linear path. It's a prison of endless possibility.
Hello, everybody. Sam Adams here, bringing you Watchers of the Plus. Glad to be back after our slight hiatus. Thanks for coming. With today's episode, we're going to be calling it "What If I Don't Get in Trouble for Saying Shang-Chi Wrong the Entire Episode." Which is somewhat of a plot point of the movie. Hey, everybody, it's Sam here, and I'm with my bad boy, the other watcher on the wall, Phil Wozniak.
We got to do two episodes. So it's like, okay, so last time we met, we did short episode. Now we're going to do extended episode. Well, I don't know about extended, but we're going to do double the content in the same amount of time. How about that? Mm-hmm.
We're each going to talk about a thing the other person didn't watch. And no, it's kind of hard to believe that we're in a time where there's this much like content, Marvel, even just Marvel stuff coming out, where it's like, we just got done with Loki and What If is out, and you're in the middle of What If and Shang-Chi, and it's all, and they all are kind of like maybe tying together in some parts and everything. It's very, very interesting. So I'm loving it. You know,
I need to say something. There's more to the streaming than it is the MCU. There are a lot of things out there. So, you know, us as watchers, we can talk about it to each other. And, you know, there's these people that are listening, but we are pillars in our arenas. So we have to watch what we can watch. Like, we all have just a narrow purview of the entire pie.
Yeah. And I mean, and that's why some weeks we come here and we're like, all I did was watch this and 30 Rock. But, you know, we got some new stuff for you guys this week too. You know, my fiance and I buzzed through all 6 episodes of The White Lotus on HBO Max. We'll talk a little bit about that later. Not a lot, but a little bit. But you know, let's dive into the What If, because that's what I feel like is
right. That's
it's going to kind of branch everything out from there. So I mean, first we got What If all the Avengers died, and then we have What if
Doctor Strange
got cray. Yeah,
if he lost his heart rather than his hands.
Now, that's one thing I do have to admit that I find interesting about some of these What Ifs is I feel like back in the day it was kind of changing like one thing and then it would spiral out.
Yes.
And the Doctor Strange one really kind of shows they're like, oh, what if he lost his heart instead of his hands? And I guess maybe the what if is really like, what if he and Christine had never broken up? Is really kind of the question. Okay. And then so she would have been in that car and that she would have been in that accident, yada, yada. But, you know, I think that that's, I like that they're being a little more liberal with it. Like, I like that it's like, okay, well, here's a slightly different version of what you looked at. And yeah, there's a couple things that have changed, but for the most part, it's just, hey, we're telling these other, and you see they're really building characters that they can bring back. Like that Doctor Strange trapped in that little, you know, whatever, crimson prison or whatever at the end of that movie or the end of the episode. See, like I even called it a movie at the end of the episode. He could hop to another reality. He's been bringing monsters from other realities this whole episode. Like, I could see him hopping over to Captain Carter's reality or T'Challa Star-Lord's reality or something.
Okay, so let me say a few things about, we're going to go from 4 back to 3. Okay, so because 4 is prominent, everybody's covering it, so might as well cover it, and then we'll go back to 3.
Well, and really, the Dead Avengers one was fun, but is there really a lot to talk about? It's a different Avengers where it's Captain Marvel and Captain America are going to start it, and they're going to go beat up Loki, I guess.
I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I liked it. Lake Bell did a good job. Right there.
And that's a problem. That's a problem, Sam, that you were able to cover it in probably one slug line.
And Lake Bell did good as Black Widow. You know, I'm always very like interested to see how the voice replacements do, because for the most part, they're bringing everybody back. I mean, heck, when they for Doctor Strange, they were able to get what's her face to come back, even though she was barely had anything to do in the main movie.
Yeah.
So
I thought the Doctor Strange one felt very long, and it's interesting that you said movie. That was a Freudian slip that I think. you didn't intentionally need to make, but you did make it because this last episode felt very long, and yet it really wasn't. But it was the most what if I feel that we've seen, which is you change a few things and it builds on from there. And you see what happens to a character if they make essentially the wrong choice, if you will. Mm-hmm. I mean, I thought it was cool.
And I liked it, you know, and kind of you're expecting the good Strange to win and he doesn't. And I like that. You know, I think that that's what this version of storytelling really allows these creators to do is to have the bad guy win or to have the unexpected thing happen. And I think they've done a good job of, like, you know, Captain Carter was dipping our toes in, and, you know, same with Star-Lord, you know, so they just kind of went, we're going to swap out a character and show you how this is going to work. And the first one was very beat by beat, almost the same as the movies, except, you know, Bucky survives and, you know, she goes back in time or forward in time instead. And the second one, it's like, okay, it's even a little bit more different because Walt T'Challa, Star-Lord, he's obviously, like, united the entire universe. He's made Thanos a good guy. So I like how they're kind of slowly and slowly getting kind of crazier and crazier. And I hope that this just keeps going. Like, I would love if every 2 years we got a new what if, just basically be like, okay, we're going to do the next phase of Marvel movies and make, you know, do what ifs from these. But, you know, I also think that we could get some, I think we got our first hint of our boy Uatu ready to step in. He let him know that I could step in, but
that is the crucial part.
I'm really not supposed to.
Yes, that's the crucial part of this entire episode, is that not only does Doctor Strange recognize that there is an entity watching, and then they double down and communicate with each other, which is massive. Well, we got 9 episodes of this. So, I mean, we're right in the wheelhouse of when things should be happening.
Yeah, and I think that we're supposed to get Marvel Zombies this week, so that they released a little trailer about that. So, and that's probably the one I was looking forward to the least. Like, I know people love the comic, but I've never read it, and I don't know, maybe Walking Dead. Maybe
I don't know dick about it, but it's very interesting to me. And I think the part that was interesting was the animation. Now, I will tell you, from my daughter, who's very into anime and manga right now, I mean, they're the hot thing right now. She said to me, you know, she said, Dad, you know, I like the 3D. I get it. But it feels like they could be doing so much more in 2D. And she said, look at, especially at the end trailer, at the end credits, where the artwork is really almost exploratory. She said, wouldn't it be cool if it looked like this and it was just flat? And I said, you're not wrong. And in fact, I think you're a little bit right. I think that they're, you know, using the Toon Boom and that kind of animation style, I think has limited them on the artistic expression, which I will go ahead and say, you know, with the amount of characters, and you touched upon this, that are falling off, that we're not going to ever see on screen anymore. We're probably not going to see ScarJo. We're probably not going to see Robert Downey Jr. This is going to be their bread and butter, which is their animated department. And look, I'm particular about artwork. And if you can make something very visually interesting and have a compelling storyline, then you've met both beasts, because essentially it's comic books animated, which I hate to say it, but that's the reason I got into this. It wasn't to get them on screen necessarily.
Yeah. I mean, I like the animation style, but I mean, just look at Rick and Morty, which just had its finale this week. That's kind of more of a flat 2D animation style. Very. And they're able to do very cool action sequences, like, on the regular. I mean, every episode, it seems like they're out jumping out of some dangerous, death-defying thing, and bullets are whizzing around, and lasers, and Rick shooting a hand somewhere. So,
on the back end, like, Sam, on the back end, it is three-dimensional, but it's presented as 2D. So like, so any of the nerds out there that are going to be like, eh, well, wait a minute, this is actually done in Maya and it's 3D. I get that. I know that, but it's done in a cel shaded arena, and the possibility is there. It doesn't have to look 3D. It could look completely flat and be okay.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, I think it looks good, but I'm not saying that it couldn't be better. I mean, I'm not, I don't think I'm enough of an expert in animation that usually I just am kind of like, ooh, I like this version or I don't like this version. You know, it's like I literally was watching the finale for Rick and Morty yesterday, and an ad for a new show, I think it was called like Teenage, it's called something weird, like Teenage Euthanasia or something like that.
Oh my gosh.
And that sounds fantastic. And it has like a, it's like an, I think it's an Adult Swim thing, and it's got a similar style to Rick and Morty, but it was just off enough that I'm like, no, I don't like this, you know. So it doesn't take a lot to kind of throw people off.
Well, but you weren't a big fan of Solar Opposites.
And, you know, I didn't mind. It's just one of those shows that I tried to watch a couple episodes and it never got me. Like I just never, it never sunk its teeth into me. And so I feel like it's a show I could see going back to. I don't know, are they still making it? I mean, I'm sure.
You know, that's a great question. I don't.
Did they do one season, two seasons?
It was two seasons. I think it's just. I think it's just been, you know, delayed and delayed, perhaps. But then again, you look at Rick and Morty. I mean. Some of the way in which these seasons get propped up, it becomes almost kind of happenstance. I would imagine there's a season three in the works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they just finished Rick and Morty, so who knows? They might have been working on that in between or something. So, which Rick and Morty, another good season. I don't know if you got to watch
any of it. I have not watched the finale. You've just told me, which is very exciting. So that means that tonight I need to watch it.
It's a two-parter too, so it's an hour. So that's nice.
And, fantastic.
And you do, if without giving up too much away, you do finally find out Rick's backstory and find out what makes him the Rickest Rick of all Ricks.
that doesn't excite me as much as it excites me, and yet I like mystery.
Yeah. Well, you know, what's funny is like, he literally complains about it. It's like, oh, Morty, why are we doing this? This requires a canon. You know, I hate that. You know, I prefer one-off adventures. So I wonder if they're going to get like, maybe they're going to get away from it because they're just like, okay, here, we're doing this. But, you know, but most of the season was really just kind of one-off things like, oh, we're, you know, Morty's trying to hook up with Jessica and he's making wine in a different alternate dimension where the society wants to kill him.
That's right.
You know, it's just, I like those ones a little bit better, I think, but no, for the most part, I thought it was a pretty good season. Like, you know, not everything was my favorite episode, but the finale is a little weird, the episode 9 to episode 10, but by the time you get to the end, it's good. And I think it's going to change the dynamic a little bit of the show too. So, overall,
yeah,
I get it.
Now, okay.
It's kind of what I feel like Parks and Rec is kind of like for me. It's like, or Parks and Rec. Rick and Morty is kind of for me, kind of like Archer, where I just am like, hey, I love the show. I love these characters. I love this style. I, you know, even though Archer ain't what she used to be, it's still better than no Archer.
Yeah. I agree.
Which RIP, Jessica Walters, because it reminded me last week when Archer came back that she had passed away, and I was like, oh man,
yeah.
Well, and RIP to one of the greats from this weekend. I hate to remiss that we even went this far. Michael K. Williams, aka Omar from The Wire, geez. Aka scared guy on the street in The Incredible Hulk. So I was, you know, I've been taking celebrity deaths so hard this past year and a half. Part of it was 2020 and people would pass away and you just didn't need more bad news. I mean, the Chadwick Boseman thing like still gets me, like it still bums me out. And I still like, I just saw a video on Instagram the other day of him during like a press thing where you can tell he's exhausted and his eyes are closed and he's falling asleep. And Paul Bettany like taps him and he goes like, hey, are you okay? And he goes like, I better be, right? You know, and he laughs. And I'm just like, God, you know, a poor guy was just suffering in silence over there and yet just doing everything and trying to make the world a better place.
Well, like, I think Michael K. Williams, I think for me, the reason it hit me so hard, and I say so hard, and that might be stretching it a little bit, but I think
I cheered up. I got a little emotional.
But you look at an actor that's 54 years old that really only hit his stride probably 15 years ago, mm-hmm. and really started to make inroads. And it's like, damn, we missed an opportunity with him, and he should have been in more stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you see him in The Wire, and really beyond that, he was in stuff, but he'd be a very side character, yes. where maybe most he had 3 to 5 scenes in like a movie or something
at best.
And really he should have had a movie where he was the star and
easily 100%.
Yeah. And it's a shame that, you know, he had the success, but like how much money could he have possibly made from 5 seasons of The Wire? Retiring off that.
How cool would it have been to have him as Deadshot?
Oh,
see,
yeah.
Did you
see that stupid fucking WB wished Idris Elba a happy birthday this weekend and called him Deadshot? That's why WB's the shits, because they don't even know the names of their own actors and characters. But I digress. You know, yeah,
it's funny you mentioned the shits, which is, whether you knew this or not, that's a wrestling term. And today, or actually on Sunday,
only you could bring this back to wrestling.
That's right, because on Sunday, AEW had All Out 2021, and it was literally the best pay-per-view I have ever seen. I lost my voice 2 hours into it. It was absolutely the best tag team championship I've ever seen in my life, and there was a lot of good stuff that happened. I didn't want to get into it because it's going to fall deaf on you, DeSam. But I can just
sorry,
say,
everybody. I'm sorry. I apologize on behalf of Mose. He can't help himself.
I can't.
The Giants beat the Dodgers 2 out of 3 this weekend. We're in first place. Let's go, Giants. There's real sports happening too.
Baseball is not a Greek theater. And I literally showed my sister-in-law.
You've never been to a Friday night Giants Dodger game with a little bit of heat on.
I was able to convince people that aren't even into wrestling the theater and the theatrics and the athleticism that is AEW. That's all I'm going to say about that. If Incomparable was doing a wrestling show, I would be on it. That's all I can say. There was one at one point. I think it's dead now, but it needs to be revitalized.
Maybe one day it'll be an Olympic sport and it'll be in the gymnastics and it'll be right after the floor exercise. The floor exercise gets over and then the bars come up out of the ground and the stage reveals itself.
Oh, one can only hope. I did watch something very interesting, Sam, that was on Apple Plus, and Apple Plus has been pretty much kind of bogarted to Ted Lasso for me. And I took
I've tried to get into Mythic Quest, and
yeah,
it's all right. But I just I don't care. I don't know enough about video games to get all the little
okay. Are you so you're ready?
Jokes.
Are you ready?
What do we got? Is this the one you've been threatening to watch,
Mr. Corman?
Oh, the JGL vehicle.
Yes.
How is that?
Okay. So if anyone has listened to what I had talked about in regards to Mr. Robot, I will say the same kind of thing, which is I let it wash over me and let it be what it's going to be. I cannot tell you exactly what it's about necessarily, but it is very interesting in its slice of life action. Mr. Corman is a musician who kind of decides, like, and I take this kind of personally because it's very much like me. It's like, well, I did graduate with an art degree, but I became an art teacher. And he was a musician who becomes a fifth grade teacher. And it's much bigger than that, but like that kind of stress and pull of that situation. And there's even kind of a musical part of the entire as you get later in like episode 4, I believe. But it's very interesting, and I can't necessarily tell you that I loved it, but I couldn't break away from it. So that's kind of where Mr. Robot was for me. It's like, I just allow it to be what it is. Even Legion, I allow it to be what it is and just take part in it.
Yeah, Legion, I was ready to just experience it. You know, I was ready to dive into the weird. Yeah. And, you know, it sounds like your Mr. Corman experience is a little bit like what I had with The White Lotus on HBO. Like, that was one that got a lot of traction. You know, the boys on the watch were talking about it every week. And I was kind of just like, okay, maybe. And I heard enough people talk about it. I was like, okay, I'm going to give it a try. And one of those few dramas that my girlfriend actually was like, I'll watch it. And I was like, really? You'll watch something that's not reality? Fake? Yeah. Fake? All right. So we watched it and we were intrigued by it. And my one problem with it is that they tease that somebody died in the very first scene. And then you don't know who it is until the final episode. And so I feel like I was kind of watching it with like almost a little murder mystery in my head. And I think the show would have been better just straightforward and had that be like a surprise at the end. But, you know, it's kind of this show about a resort filled with awful rich white people and the people that are, you know, servicing their every need and working for the resort, and how maybe they're really not that great of people. There's a lot of bad people on the show, which is funny. There's a lot of great actors. I mean, Connie Britton's in it. Steve Zahn's in it. Who am I forgetting? There's one guy that I bet you, if you saw his face, you'd be like, oh, I know him from things.
Temple from Ted Lasso is in Mr. Corman. I haven't seen her yet, but she's in
Juno
it.
She's Keeley.
Yes.
Okay. And then who else? The girl that everybody on the internet has a boner for, Alexandria Daddario, that actress is in it.
I don't know. Was she a TikToker? I don't know.
She was Woody Harrelson's wife in that, or no, not his wife, his mistress in that thing with him. And God, I am all over the place. I can't think of any shows right now. She was the hot lady in True Detective that Woody Harrelson was like sneaking off to go.
Oh boy.
So she's one of those like girls that the internet is always like, Daddario. And I'm just like, okay, yeah, she's a beautiful lady. Yeah. Like, okay, we get it. But yeah, no, it's just, there's a couple that's there on their honeymoon. And then there's a family that's there with like, you know, two children and then one of the girl's friends from college. And there's, you know, but it's weird. I mean, like the very first episode, you meet a lady who's, it's her first day working at the resort. And it turns out she's pregnant and she's having some pains and her water breaks and she has the baby a month early and she had taken the job because she needed the money. And then you're like, oh, wow, that's really interesting. I wonder what's going to happen. Never see her again for the next five episodes. You know, so Mike White is the creator, I believe. I'm not sure. I know he's somewhat popular, but I can't think off the top of my head of what else he's done. Very gorgeous shots of Hawaii and waves and everything. So it's an interesting show and it has some, you know, it definitely has some things to say. Cause I mean, there's a lot of like family sitting around the table arguing about privilege and straight white males versus this, and is it okay to break people down by race when they're in power but when they're not, you know? And like, you know, the whole issue of people going on vacation and there's these natives that are putting on dances for them, and do they even really like doing it, or are they just doing it because they have to because it's their job and it's actually embarrassing, or, you know, just things like that. But I don't feel like it leans on any one side or the other either. I mean, that they have a good, I feel like both sides have good points, and it's a weird show. It's the best way I can put it. It's a weird show.
Well, we brought two weird shows, which I think weird shows are okay, because I think, you know, and I've always been an advocate for this. And I think anyone who listens to us and has even remotely listen to the things that I've said, which is, you know, I call down mediocrity, and it's like, if you take risks, if you don't take the risk, you miss. I mean, automatically. But taking risks can be a very, very vital thing, because it changes the game a little bit and expands the things that we might want to watch. You know, look, the sitcom, for the most part, is dead. So now we're looking at these hybrids and this manifestation and mutations that have come down the line. I'm excited for it. You know, weird is okay.
Mm-hmm. Oh, like you mentioned Legion. Like, I think that was beyond weird, but I think it was a huge success. And weird is how you get the new standard, is you find you have somebody try something new and everybody loves it. And then pretty soon everyone's got bullet time in their fucking movie or whatever. Exactly. You know? So I'm all for it, you know? Speaking of weird, let's transition that into Shang-Chi. Because okay, I know you didn't see it.
Yes.
So I want to sell you on it.
Yes. Now it's going to be hard.
Why don't you give me your top three concerns and I'll see if I can't douse them for you.
Okay. Here are my concerns about Shang-Chi. Okay. Number one,
I believe Awkwafina was one of them.
No, I think she was tremendous in Crazy Rich Asians. I thought she stole the show actually in probably that movie. And that's also probably one of my fears of her stealing the show. But I don't have any inroads to Shang-Chi. The reason being, my ring's going off. Shang-Chi was a 70s comic. It was very much part of, if I remember correctly, I had an old comic with him and Doctor Strange, and it was like a three-part story. I don't have any inroads other than he was an analog in my world to Bruce Lee. Now, Bruce Lee was huge for me. So anything that was cutting into that in a way that I felt was biting Bruce Lee immediately was discounted. So just understand that. I just don't have any real solid connection to Shang-Chi other than I know that he's part of this universe. And then when I look at the main actor, I think, boy, I watched Ninja Assassin. That guy, the actor for Ninja Assassin, looks like what they were missing, and they didn't go for that. So it becomes kind of like, I don't know this actor, which is okay. And I can get behind, you know, I can be turned on if an actor is better than I think he is. But when I look at really solid martial arts films, there, you know, and then the idea that, oh, well, he's the first Asian actor, you know, for a comic book movie. He's like, wait a minute. I think we all remember Brandon Lee, but maybe we don't. And The Crow.
Yeah, the Crow. It's whatever.
Dude, The Crow. No. Stop.
We used to I have to admit, I've never seen The Crow. And there was a poor soul that we went to grade school with that we used to make fun of for loving The Crow.
Let me just tell you that when I was graduating high school, The Crow, that soundtrack number one was fan fucking tastic. And then add in like my experience with Bruce Lee, this is his son. And then he dies. I mean, it was just, it was heartbreaking. Because I really think that whole series could have been an incredible vehicle for Brandon Lee. It wasn't a great first movie. I mean, I'm the first to tell you that there were some weak points, but it had legs, 100% legs.
Well, let me see if I can address some of these issues. So one, I know, like you mentioned, Awkwafina, she does great. She's not too much in it. I know some people were worried about her maybe being a little too much, and that's not the case. I think that she makes sense. She is a good kind of point of view character of being like, what's going on around here? But also like, you know, her and the main actor are basically like party buddies, and they play that version like that. You're in your 20s, you wake up hungover every day. You basically text each other, you know, you grab each other on the way to work.
He doesn't strike me as in his 20s. I thought he was like in his 40s.
No, now I don't know how old the actor is, but I believe he's supposed to be 26 or something.
Yeah, okay.
Those lines or whatever, late 20s. So, okay. You know, they have good chemistry in it. They do a good job of showing off San Francisco without being like Golden Gate. You know, it's like, here's Chinatown. Here's like, there's parts of the city that I recognize that I'm like, oh, you don't see that in movies very often. Like, you don't see guys go to the, like the little corner Asian market with the live fish in the buckets. Like, you know, that's not an Ant-Man.
So, we don't want we don't want wet market. Easy.
No, yes, but no. It's not bad. Okay. I've been to those markets before. It's stuff you eat. It's not stuff that you're not.
I've gone to RJ's in.
No, there was probably something in the back that we don't know about.
Yeah, RJ's in San Francisco is great. It's just a little too real for some people.
Yeah, you know, so it's not everybody can look at a bucket full of frogs and be cool. But the main actor's good in it. You know, he does a good job of playing somebody that's escaped, and then he's kind of drugged back into his former life. I want to call him the Mandarin, but they really never call him that. Wen Wu, the actor that I think his name's Tony Leung or something like that. Yeah. He's great in it. And honestly, it's one of those villain problems, like, or it doesn't have the villain problem that MCU can have sometimes. Like, you understand his motivations.
We didn't have two villains. Wait a minute, Sam. What's the
there's villain? Multiple? Well, hear me. Like, there's Razor Hand, but he's a henchman. You know, which
I'm
is
okay
nothing.
With that. Okay. If you tell me that there was a villain people. On top of Mandarin, quote Mandarin, then there's a problem.
Well, there's a threat, I will say. There's something that he's going to do that might cause a lot of problems, but he doesn't. He thinks he's doing the right thing and he's doing the wrong thing. You know, it's one of those where in his heart of hearts, he's doing what needs to be. He's doing something that needs to
like
be
summoning
done.
Galactus.
There's some teases towards the end too. Okay. So, I mean, I don't want to get into it,
I'm going to spoil the piss out of this because this is my mind going in and looking at what things are around me on the internet. And I've heard a few things. So again, I'm sorry. I just spoiled a bunch of people right there.
But. Well, and I don't think that there's any Galactus Easter eggs in this, I will say. But so a couple selling points. It was more mystical and magical than I expected, which I liked. I was a little worried it was going to just be karate chops. And as much as I love a good karate chop, you know, it's the MCU. I'm used to Iron Man's and Hulk's and Captain America's.
So would you have rather seen this as Iron Fist then if I remove Iron Fist from the Marvel television universe, if I could replace it with Shang-Chi, is that better?
You mean if Iron Fist was the main character of this movie?
I take Iron Fist out of your viewing experience. He never existed on Netflix, and instead I transplant Shang-Chi.
Oh, I mean, the actors in Shang-Chi actually did martial arts exercises before the cameras started rolling. So, Shang-Chi is better. I mean, the action's great. I texted my friends. It was MCU meets Jackie Chan meets – there was some other third thing that I can't remember what it was making me think of. Oh, John Wick. That it had that, like, to where it's longer shot. It's not like cut, 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 cut. It's, you know, you see boom, 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 boom.
You would go on record to say that you felt like that you were watching a martial arts film?
Yes. I mean, the sky, I mean, you're going to know most of the beats from this movie if you've seen a trailer. When they're fighting on the skyscraper, it's amazing. When they're fighting on the bus, it's impressive, especially considering he's trying to save all these people on this bus. And he's got a guy with a giant razor fist coming after him.
So is Shang kind of a secret agent? He knows what he is. He does it. This is not origin story.
You kind of get a lot of the origin in the first 5 minutes. Okay. So, I mean, basically he was raised to be this kind of weapon for his father. And then he bolted and it's 10 years later and his father's come back to get him. I mean, it's not pretty, you know, basic stuff.
So we're talking Luke Skywalker, Darth Vader.
A little bit. Yeah. And no mom around. You know, his mom has passed away. And it has, you know, that's a plot point in the movie, and you'll find out why. I mean, it's not a big deal. You know, the death itself isn't like the biggest deal, but you find out, you know, it just these characters, it's kind of a broken family, and these characters all have differing motivations, you know. And yeah, I mean, he's complex. You know, you see why he agreed to train when he was a kid, but then why he also bucked away. And, you know, all the relationships seem to make sense. And, you know, there's some fun cameos in it. Hopefully not all of them have been spoiled for you guys yet that haven't seen it yet. But I mean, the mid credit scene made me go, ah, like, you know, kind of thing, like, okay. Like, and,
well,
things from the trailer.
These are people that we have seen in the mid credits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like you get more Wong than you see in the trailers, and just Wong MVP. I mean, he's just the best. I mean, it's not like you get a ton more, but the little bit you get, you're just like, who doesn't love Wong? So he's great in it. And I think that's one of the smart things they did. Like I said, there is a little bit more magic. And this is more towards the end when things get a little bit more powerful and magical and things of that nature. And you start learning a little bit more about it. Some of the fight sequences are just amazing. Specifically, there's a fight sequence between Wenwu and somebody in his past that you see in the first like 5 or 10 minutes. Wenwu? That's the Mandarin.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. AKA the Mandarin. There was one cameo that they did a pretty good job of not spoiling anywhere, that, you know, it could have gone wrong, but I think it worked well. And I think I came in the same way as you. Like, I never even, honestly, before they just said we're making a Shang-Chi movie, I never remember hearing about it. Like,
mind,
I read a lot of crossover comic books, yes, and Shang-Chi wasn't in like Onslaught. Shang-Chi wasn't in the Age of Apocalypse. Like, there was a lot of crossover things where there was, you know, with a lot of Avengers jumping out of an airplane, where I never saw or heard of anyone named Shang-Chi. So I know this is a deep cut, but I kind of appreciated going into it not being like, all right, I want to see Iron Man in a cave. I want to see the Mark One suit. I want to see, you know, like, I feel like it was kind of nice going into a Marvel movie being like, I don't know anything about this. I don't know what's supposed to happen. And I'm good with that. Like, I'm kind of just along for the ride, and I enjoyed it all the way through. I'm kind of anxiously wanting to, like, I'm kind of mad that I'm going on vacation this week and I don't have time to go see it again before I go. Because I'd like to see it one more time. There was specifically one thing that I'll even tell you to watch out for. When Wong leaves the movie, he opens up a portal, and I'm like, where the fuck are they going? Like, I was very, like, I didn't get a good enough look at
For me, I will probably wait until it comes out on Disney Plus, which apparently
is only a 45-day window, I believe.
Right. Look, there is a host of negative waves that have happened because of this movie, and I am not riding that negative wave, but I do feel like, with much of the way the media has portrayed certain things, that the numbers don't line up for me. It doesn't. And it's like, okay, so you beat Rob Zombie in opening day weekend. Who hasn't? Like,
yeah, no, the numbers, I don't understand the reporting of the numbers, because they're acting like this is one of the biggest Labor Day weekend openings ever. And I can't imagine that's the case.
Like you're beating a horror film. Yeah.
Like, I've seen movies have like $300 million opening weekends. Like, there's no way that this, like, now post pandemic. Yeah. I'm sure the numbers are great. And that's one thing I think that people need to realize, is that it's going to be a while. Like, studios were used to those billion-dollar movies, exactly, coming out for everyone. Yes. And that's going to be a while. Yep. Either that, or you're just going to have to be used to part of that billion being on Disney Plus.
And numbers and like, financial numbers don't qualify a movie to be good. Let's just be flat out. I mean, there's,
well, I haven't heard from anybody legitimate that I respect tell me that this movie's bad. I mean, I three nerd friends that I talk to the most about this stuff.
Yeah.
The two that saw it were like, thumbs up, badass. Now, they're also the types that would say the same thing about like the Mortal Kombat movie. So, you know, what are,
okay,
you,
that's an assault, right?
But at the same time, I still like, I, literally, like, there's, you know, if there might be some, like, some guy out there that hates Chinese movies or something that hates.
Yeah, but see, I don't buy into that because there's too many good martial arts films that have come out since, you know, the 60s that are absolute watershed moments. So I don't buy into any of that. But what I don't buy into it is that he was the first. I just, that's the part that really offends me, because you're forgetting a lot. Even I'll go so far as to say, like, a Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, which is fantastic. I mean, it is a seminal film.
Oh, and you know what? Having not seen that, I feel like some of the action is a little Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. So it does feel like it's kind of paying a little bit of respect and homage to some of the,
and that's okay.
Some
with
of
me.
The, yeah, that's, which I mean, think about it. We are in the fan filmmaker time. I mean, everybody that's a filmmaker now grew up watching them. They have their favorite things. I mean, think about it. The Simpsons are literally just like a collection of making fun of old movies and stuff. I mean, there's
and
literally, like, you could see
ideas.
Yeah. Which, I mean, it's which I've taken, you know, like, I will jam in Simpsons references into, like, videos I make for work or whatever. And just, even if it's just little stuff, like, you know, Homer walking into the brothel and realizing that Bart's the bouncer, and then taking his hat off and then putting it right back on. Like, oh no, actually that's Grandpa Simpson that does that. But, you know, just I feel like
That's the kind of stuff I miss, because I really have not been a part of the whole Simpsons thing. I, you know, Futurama, that was something that I watched, but I didn't watch any of the Simpsons, really. I mean, except early on. And it just wasn't something that I caught on to, but I know there's
I was a standing in line at grade school Monday morning. Like, did you watch last night? How about this? Yeah. How about this, right, kind of guy? Right. And when Futurama first came out, I didn't like it as much, because I was like just wanting more Simpsons basically. But then when I came back to it, when I was a little bit older,
exactly,
burned through it and thought it was hilarious.
I remember watching it when it first came out. I didn't get it either. And then it was only about, you know, probably 4 years ago that I really was like, my gosh, this thing is so smart. And that's why it failed, because it was really too smart. And which involves the whole Rick and Morty thing, which will bring on the pestilence of different viewpoints. But, you know, I don't ever want to be on record as like, oh, Rick and Morty's the greatest thing. It's very, very good. Okay. And, but I won't say that it's too smart for anyone, but it's just very good.
Yeah. I love Rick and Morty, and it's definitely very, like, it can be very dumb, but it also is very smart in that, you know, it's like, if you're a sci-fi fan, it's making fun of everything sci-fi. Like, I used to love heist movies, and now,
yes,
I think that I hate them because
it deconstructs them and shows,
because
you exactly
it deconstructed
the
it. Now I'm like, oh my god, they're all the fucking same. Like, yes. How god dang you, Dan Harmon, you've ruined a whole genre of movies for me.
And going on that point, Sam, I think that's the part with Shang-Chi that I have to that I gird my loins about, is because I was very much into, especially, the Big Boss, Fists of Fury, and the Bruce Lee seminal films, as short of a time span that Bruce Lee had on Earth to create films, like, every one of those films shows something that is completely foreign to an American audience, to understand the occupation of the Japanese by China. I mean, these things we don't understand. And yet Bruce showed these in the forefront and educated me to them, and educated me to a whole, like, an area of art, which was ukiyo-e and doing, and the woodblock prints. I mean, you have to understand that, and then it put me into what is now considered manga, which I don't consider manga, but, like, they had the whole Lone Wolf and Cub edition, which the Baby Card Assassin, who was like, and they kind of made a mockery of it in some regards, which was the Shogun Warrior and Shogun Assassin, which was fantastic. I mean, like it ticks boxes that, like, for me are just a visceral thing. Like, it just, right. It's the same way we see, like, the same way someone would watch Fast 9 and get so jacked up, bring it back over to you.
Well, I mean, I watch Fast 9 as a comedy, so.
Of course. I got it. But, like, there are some people that take it ultra serious. And, like, but for me, it's like this, the idea of the Asian experience and history, like, that was something that I was brought to by these characters, not as a whim, but it was just like, oh, I need to know more. And it educated me in my experience.
Well, I say two thumbs up. I was very pleasantly surprised. No big gripes.
So here's the thing. What's the number one MCU film for you?
Oh God, I'm so terrible at ranking stuff like this.
All right, let me put it to you like this.
I mean, here, recency effect kind of really takes over for this. So, I mean, I loved Endgame. So that pays off so much of the MCU. So it's kind of hard not to pick that. But if we're maybe go non-Avengers movie editions.
Don't go, because here's where you're going to go.
Well, I mean, here, I both love Winter Soldier and Civil War.
Okay.
You know, Doctor Strange, I like. I, it's funny, I actually learned a lesson, which is help. You know, you go watch Doctor Strange in 3D on, you know,
on edibles,
non-clear eyed, and you know, you come out.
I can't even imagine how good that might be.
It's not all about you, you know. And then literally, like, relearn that lesson later that night when something happened to my friend. I was like, oh my God, you know, we all go through our own thing. You know, like, it was funny how I, like, learned life lessons from that. But yeah, I would say those. I mean, the first Iron Man movie I always love. I love Ragnarok is another one. Okay. I really like.
Where is it better than Ragnarok?
No, but you know, I'd put it above the Ant-Man's. I'd put it above the third Iron Man.
Okay.
I mean, like, I'd put it in the top third about. I would say it's right there with, like, you know, it maybe not as good, but I think I liked it better than Black Panther. And you know, you could in some ways say
now you've just told me something very, like, I don't hold Black Panther in the highest regard as others might. And there's a few different reasons why, but you have actually demarcated where my level of want would be. So, you are selling me harder than you think you are.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, and I like Black Panther, but I feel like it's Black Panther's almost a more, like, it's more important than it is good. If that makes sense. Like, it's
that, no, that,
and I feel like this has, but Sam, that this has a little bit of that Black Panther feel to it, because
don't feel bad about what you just said.
No. You can tell they were very respectful about, like, you know, you actually see Shang-Chi meet Katie, is Awkwafina's character in the movie. You see him meet her family and how he speaks Chinese to, Chinese. I don't know if I used the right term there. Mandarin. Or, I don't know.
He's, you're all right.
Yeah. He speaks some sort of native language. The grandmother.
You're all right.
And then there's actually a lot of this movie that's actually in another language that you have to read subtitles for. Not all of it or anything, but there's
which
a good
okay.
Port,
I am
which
not,
is fun,
not
totally works for me. You know, like, I think it's important the times where it does it. But yeah, you know, it's a mostly Asian cast. You know, you get, I enjoyed the shit out of it. I had a good time. I thought it was funny. I thought there was a lot of good laughs in it. I just go see it. I can't wait to talk to more about spoilery stuff, like what it means for the bigger MCU picture. 'Cause it definitely seems like it set up a couple different things.
It just feels like to me, like, right now with the MCU, it is so, I don't, and again, this sounds negative, but it just sounds like things are very broken. We're getting a lot of individual films And we're so used to lining things up and having everything spoon-fed down that no one is, you know, again, it's like the Eternals. I don't care about the Eternals. No one ever did to be.
But, you know, I feel like where your gripe's coming in here, this expands the world. You get to see, you know, you get to see what's some of the underground stuff that's going on in China.
Okay.
You get to see, you know, like I said, you check in with some characters that we've seen. I will say there are.
This is where Namor comes in.
There are four characters that show up that are not in the trailers that you've seen in other Marvel movies before.
Okay. Other than Abomination.
Yes. Not accounting Abomination or Wong.
Okay.
About them apples. Now, one of them is very minor. I'll even spoil this. It's the guy that says, "Hey, Spidey, do a flip." In the first Spider-Man movie, he shows up. the comedian that's like at the hot dog cart during that little montage in the first Spider-Man movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he live streams the fight from the bus.
So wait, he went from New York to San Francisco?
Yeah, he must have moved. And he's supposedly playing the same character, which he seems like he's playing the same character. But
okay.
He's got more to do in this movie because he basically live streams the fight on the bus.
Okay.
Like, man, look what's going on.
So, okay, I'm good.
But that's the least exciting returning character. There's three other characters that you're going to be like, oh shit. Okay, cool.
Huh. Interesting. John Krasinski? Yeah.
No. But two of them are cameos and one of them actually is a part of the movie. So don't get too excited, you know.
Sam, now you just built it up and then you just basically
It expands the world. You know, you learn how he fits into certain things. You can tell he's plugged into certain stuff now. And like I said, it kind of weaves. He is Hugo definitely weaving in some solar systems now that he wasn't in when he was parking cars for people in San Francisco. The beginning of the movie.
Was he parking cars at the top of the hill?
Oh no, I think he's working for the Fairmont Hotel.
Over the top.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Interesting. Very interesting. Which is the worst hill to try to climb up with your car because you will literally sputter your wheels no matter what car you're in.
Ugh. So yeah. Well, I mean, I guess that's kind of all we got today, except we didn't really talk about Ted Lasso, but guys over at Football Is Life is doing a good job on the weekly breakdowns.
Yeah, that's fine.
And honestly, like, I don't want to go episode through episode. I'm very mad at myself that I didn't see that Sam was the one texting her. Like, I literally noticed.
See that?
Well, no. That I didn't see it coming. Okay. That I didn't.
No.
I remember going,
that was a swerve. That was a wrestling swerve.
Well, here's the thing though, is that like, I knew that it wasn't going to be Ted just because it was they were setting it up too hard. I could tell that we were going for a curve there, but I noticed in season one that they had chemistry. Like there's the point where he asks her to show up to the burning of the thing so they can get rid of the curse. And he's like, oh, no, I'm not asking you on a date, even though I'm sure that you get a lot of date quests because you're a beautiful woman and blah, blah, blah. And like there's like the karaoke scene, there's a part where like he's smiling. I think they're maybe sitting next to each.
You just brought in deep cuts that I had not thought of.
Yeah. Like I remember season one being like, oh, I think he likes her. Like, I wonder if there's anything there. And so the fact that I didn't fucking figure it out for the season two thing makes me really mad because I'm really proud of myself being able to predict what's going to happen.
Let me just pat you on the back virtually right now because you just brought up a huge amount of things. There you go. That I don't believe anyone saw, and it's only on rewatching that you would even catch that back.
Oh no, yeah, no, I hadn't heard anybody predict it, but
of course they didn't. Sam, that's why you're a watcher.
Yeah, I know. You know, that's we didn't want to interfere. God dang it! We're always stuck not interfering. But I'm happy with where it's going. You know, I think maybe that there's some pacing issues due to the fact that Apple kind of jumped in and said, give us two extra this season. So I think that if anybody's got any issues with that, that's partially why it is. And the other thing is, I think that people didn't realize that while it was such a feel good episode or show last year, there was a lot of sadness in it. Like him getting the divorce and trying to fix his marriage and watching his wife, like not be able to be in the same room with him without being close to tears. And, You know, watching just the everything with Rebecca fall apart and watching the relationship.
This is why I'm a big proponent of Afterlife with Ricky Gervais. It's the only show.
And what was the other thing that happened that was, oh, and the whole not being able to get through to Jamie and him going to another team and like just the sadness. And like, there was a lot of sadness, like even just the fact that you realize two or three episodes in that Ted's making those biscuits to try it, like to try and impress his boss. And you realize what an awesome guy he is. Like,
it's there,
you know, you can't have happy without sad.
So that's the part of this season that has been slightly lost. Mm-hmm. But I understand where they're going. It's to rebuild Ted because Ted is.
I think not just Ted. Obviously, look at you're rebuilding Roy. You know, he was all embarrassed that he was, you know, seen as this puppy dog, and then he realized I am kind of. And it's of all people, it's Jamie that makes him realize he's like, I do need to give her some space.
Well, and Jamie has to be Jamie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I like that they told him, hey, look, you do need to be an asshole sometimes. Yep. Like, that's who you are. So, like, lean into it, but just lean into it when it's the right time. Like, no, I'm enjoying it. And, you know, and I agree with everybody that's having a hard time watching Nate be an asshole. I agree. It's tough, but, like, you're starting to see, like, Well, and you're starting to see how bullies are created. You know, somebody comes up from a household where their dad never appreciates them and never uses any kind of language of love. And then they take a low level job where all they are is treated like a piece of shit. And then the second they get a little taste of it, a little bit of power, then they go, well, that's how I'm supposed to act.
I really liked the end of this episode, which was all of a sudden the negative Twitter happened
post. And finally, you know, so there would have been one of the guys on Football Is Life mentioned this. They're like, there would have been a lot more racist tweets that would have come across his feed before that.
I'm not so sure about racist, but there would have been negative for sure.
I mean, come on, think about it. The London national team missed three field goal or three extra point kicks, and all and it was all all the black guys, and they like revolted and were ready to, like, you know, sending them all kinds of racist stuff. So I mean, that's the internet's a great place, but guess what, racists use it too. Yeah, so that's the unfortunate part about it.
If the Taliban still has Twitter, it's always going to be a bad place.
Gonna be a bad time.
All right, dude, but I'm too political too quick. All right, I'm sorry. Yeah,
no, but I'm fine with where Ted Lasso's going. Like, I kind of felt like this season, I almost have to look at it as like a three arc structure. You know, the first, we're in the second act, and so there's going to be some conflict and there's going to be some issues, and we're going to resolve them. You know, maybe not all of them by the end of the season. You know, but I feel like they're going to be on the upswing, and who knows? They got that big match coming up, so we'll see if they can win the cup or whatever.
No more time.
Which apparently these are all real things. I just don't know what they are.
Yeah, well, we're just not informed like that.
Well, that's what shows you is that Ted, like, I know enough about sports to appreciate the show, but I don't get all the little soccer deep cuts. But that's the thing, is like, if you're a soccer fan, it's great, but you don't need to be. Like, it's not about that.
Right. Exactly.
So yeah, I'm fine with where everything's going, and I want more, you know?
Yep. All right, Sam, look at this. We went an hour, and so we gave everybody what they expected and a little bit more, I think.
Looks like we made it.
That's right. So we did.
All right. Well, now, glad we caught up with everybody. Hopefully in like 2 months when you can rent it on VHS, we'll be able to give you the spoiler cut of
Shang-Chi. I'm only watching Shang-Chi on VHS, so I'm just waiting for that. Okay.
I will admit, you know what what was missing from Shang-Chi, and that has honestly been missing from the last three Marvel movies, but it really hit me when I was leaving the theater. I miss Stan. I really miss my Stan cameos. Like, I wish they had the technology to just put him in the background of things, or had his permission to do that. Like, I mean, Stan liked to get paid, I think, too. So I'm sure that he would have demanded some sort of
state would also like to get paid. So let's
just. But I mean, like, I would almost be fine if they just wanted to choose a replace. Like, who? I don't know who you. I mean, Feige is the only one at Marvel that would make sense, but that's not his bag. You know, like that. That's not his deal. Like, Feige's the guy that he's the power broker. He sits back and he does things from the shadows. And every once in a while,
Frank Miller.
You know, I know he has very little to do with Marvel, but I've always thought that maybe Kevin Smith would be a fun replacement. Maybe not even Kevin Smith, just Silent Bob. So he never speaks or maybe. Anything. But I would, you know what? That's our question to the diehards that actually listen to a whole hour of the show.
Yes. Tomas.
Is if you have an idea of who could be the new Stan cameo, but I mean, just, I can't.
Okay.
I can't imagine.
Let me stop you right there. Okay.
It could be Obama and it still wouldn't be Stan Lee.
Okay. Moss, Puerto Rico Moss. Who is the new Stan Lee? That's who we have to ask. He's the one that's going to answer the question. Mm-hmm. Moss, you know what to do.
Yeah. So I, like I said, I'm a Kevin Smith fan, but he does a show called Fat Man on Batman. I mean, he's more of a Batman guy than him. Even though he loves these movies,
he's tainted right now. Let's not go there.
No, so I mean, I kind of wish Feige would step in just because I feel like he's the closest thing to a Stan we have now.
We gotta have,
you know, we hang on his every word, but it's not his deal. If he hasn't been in a movie yet, he's obviously not itching to get. He knows he's got the power to put himself in a movie if he wanted to.
That's right. All right, but folks.
Yeah, R.I.P. Stan, R.I.P. Michael K. Williams, and R.I.P. fucking Chadwick. It's been a year. Miss you guys. And sorry to leave it on a bummer note, everybody, but you know what? It's been a rough two years.
here's the upper note. We'll see you next week.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see. Marvel Zombies, everybody.
You got it. Zombie time.
Talk to you guys later.